8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Snyder Basin water reclamation customers are funding a multi-million dollar reconstruction of the Silver Creek plant. In the studio with an update of how that project is going as the plant continues to operate is the general manager, Mike Lores. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we're spending like, what, $50 million?
Yes. Well, maybe a little background information here. The Water Reclamation District operates two wastewater reclamation facilities, one in Jeremy Ranch and then the other one kind of north of the Home Depot area. And we refer to that one as the Silver Creek Water Reclamation Facility. That project involves expanding the facility to handle new growth. We're actually doubling the size, and then we are upgrading the level of treatment to help protect downstream streams and reservoirs. The total project cost is $51 million.
And this is being paid for how?
Okay, 93% of that $51 million is being paid for by new growth, and 7% is being paid for by current customers.
Okay, we did see a slight increase in our monthly rates about a year ago. Will we see any more?
We anticipate some small increases due to increased cost of operation of this facility and just general inflation pressures on operating the collective system. So 2 to 3% is what we anticipate in the future.
Okay. So where does this get? I mean, we're building, it'll be twice as big, but is that going to take care of the build-out?
No. This facility is currently rated for 2 million gallons of sewage a day. When we complete construction in approximately 18 months, it'll be 4 million gallons. So we're gaining 2 million gallons of capacity, and that equates to roughly 6,000 three-bedroom homes. If you have six bedroom homes, then it's, you know, half that number. That will take care of most of the growth that we anticipate on the east side of the Park City Snydeville Basin area. But at some time in the future, probably in the mid-2020s, depending on the rate of growth that occurs, we'll need to expand the Jeremy Ranch facility as well.
All right. And when you talk about the upgrading, the treatment of it, I mean, you have explained to us that basically all of the water that the Park City area does to do dishes, take showers, and flush the toilet, it all comes to you. Hmm. You treat it, and then it goes into one of two creeks.
That's correct. The Silver Creek facility treats the wastewater, and we discharge it into Silver Creek, which flows down towards Wanship, into the Weber River, and then into Echo Reservoir. Now, one of the reasons we're improving the level of treatment, which, by the way, will be equal then to what we're currently doing at East Canyon facility, this will remove nutrients, nitrogen, and phosphorus. And one of the ways to think about what this will do is help prevent those harmful algae blooms that we've seen here locally recently. And we'll do our part in removing the phosphorus and nitrogen to help prevent those situations from occurring.
So is the water from Silver Creek making its way into the Rockport and Echo Reservoir?
It makes its way into Echo. We discharge into Weber River, which flows into Echo below Rockport.
Okay. So yep. Even though Rockport had it, it's not our
fault. It's not our fault. But certainly, Silver Creek has very little flow in it during the summertime. Matter of fact, up towards the Snyderville Basin, the only water in the creek generally is from our facility. So we treat the water to a very high level currently, and we'll even go to a higher level. And we do help support the Bonneville cutthroat trout that live in Silver Creek below our facility. And we certainly want to do our part to help prevent those harmful algal blooms in the stream down below and Echo Reservoir.
Yeah, aren't you getting all the water, though, from the Judge runoff? I mean, that's added more water than you've seen in years, yeah?
That has. Now, sometimes they use that for, drinking water. And during the dry summer months, a lot of that goes to Park City's irrigation obligations. So when the state of Utah issued our new permit for the Silver Creek facility, they assumed a zero flow above us during the summer months.
Right. And then in terms of removing the nutrients. I mean, have you been pretty successful with that on the East Canyon side?
If you'll recall, we upgraded our East Canyon facility in 2003. We were one of the first entities in the state of Utah to be required to meet these very stringent nutrient limits. We've had 100% success with our permit limitations since that time. So kudos to our staff for doing an excellent job.
And so while the water coming out of the treatment facilities is clean and pure and drinkable, apparently you're having some problems. I mean, it's not stream water. And so you are still concerned about the habitat.
Yeah, the water that we discharge is exceedingly clean. However, our treatment facilities were never designed to remove pharmaceuticals and estrogens, natural and synthetic. So we have been looking at the impact of these compounds on our local fish populations because there's so little water in the stream naturally that there's no dilution, and we're concerned about that. So we have found that during those dry summer months, those very low levels of natural and synthetic hormones can start feminizing the male fish. So we are keeping an eye on that. We study it every summer. If the situation gets any worse than what we currently see, we may have to implement additional treatments to prevent the feminization of our local male fish population.
So it's not just the hormones from birth control going into the wastewater. It's also like antidepressants and everything, all the other medication people take, huh?
Yeah, we pick up the whole slew. I mean, we can tell you what everyone's taking here in our community, but the feminization is caused by the hormones. The impact of antidepressants is currently unknown. We do not know, you know, what is the therapeutic dose of Prozac for a brown trout. That information just simply is not known. So while we can sample the fish population, you know, we can pick up the fact that in the livers and in the flesh of these fish, there's elevated levels of Prozac, we simply do not know what impact that actually has on that fish.
So you can take out nitrogen and phosphorus. Why can't you take out pharmaceuticals?
Actually, we can. We have run a whole series of pilot and bench studies, and we know how to do it. Unfortunately, it costs somewhere between $10 and $15 million per plant to install the equipment to remove those compounds. Currently, there are no state or federal regulations requiring us to remove these compounds, much less even sample for them. We have no requirements whatsoever to even look at this problem, but we know that it can be a problem because of research that's been done over in Europe and other places. So we initiated that research 10 years ago. So the bottom line is we do know how to remove it. The question is, how bad does the situation have to get before we come to our customers and say, hey, are you willing to spend an extra $5 a month to remove these pharmaceuticals to help protect our local fish population?
Well, I mean, I'm guessing it's not everybody. I mean, why not just tax the pharmaceuticals?
Well, if we had a legal means to do that, we could do that. But we currently don't have a legal means to do that.
Hmm. In terms of...
let's get back up on that. I will also say that it's not all synthetic hormones. Some of the natural hormones, menstruating female, men that, discharge testosterone through their urine, pregnant females. There are many actual natural sources of the hormones as well.
And so you say it'll be done in 18 months. How big of a challenge has it been to operate the treatment plant? Because you can't just turn it off.
No, we can't turn it off. It is exceedingly complex. We've been under construction for 18 months, and we have another 18 months to go. And yes, we're about 50% complete. We're on budget and on schedule. But it is quite a complex project. If anyone would like to see what that involves, please give me a call. I'll be happy to give you a tour. But it's a difficult project.
Yeah. And then in terms of future growth, I mean, do you have more room to get bigger, or would we need to build a third treatment plant one day?
We have master planned the total build-out of our community, and we can handle expanding our facilities within the two current locations.
All right. So once you get this done, then you turn back to East Canyon?
Yes, we've actually already started some master plan meetings for East Canyon.
And what are we talking about doing there?
That's what we're figuring out right now. We'll be working on that for about the next 12 months to kind of narrow down what needs to be done. And we are looking at some newer technologies to help reduce the cost and hold the footprint down a little bit. We've just taken a visit to Chicago to one of the large water quality conferences, and we met with manufacturers from all around the world to look at what's available.
Okay. And then in terms of growth, I mean, what are you seeing? Because it's nothing like the 90s, but we're still seeing...
We're seeing pretty good growth. Kind of put it in perspective, we're seeing between about 450 to 475 three-bedroom homes being built per year, or the equivalent thereof.
Okay.
And at the peak of our growth back in the, 06, we were about 1,000. So we're still only half, but it's still pretty busy.
Okay.
And overall, we're about, if you look at the current zoning for Park City and the Snidaville Basin, we're about 59% built out.
So we got a ways to go.
We got a ways to go.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No. If anyone would like to take a look. Tour of the construction or talk more about the pharmaceutical issue and the fish, I'll be happy to meet with them.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks for 828 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, I have Park City Municipal Transportation Manager Alfred Knotts, along with Parking and Fleet Manager Kenzie Colson with their monthly update. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Alfred, let's start with you and find out where we are with studies on both 248 and 224.
Okay, we'll start with 248. We are in the environmental phase of the project. We've been doing a lot of data collection, existing condition information collection. We've collected information related to the biological report, the National Historic Preservation Act report, which is a Section 106 report, so it looks at archaeological resources, architectural resources, and other cultural resources, so we have all of that information. We're in the process of reviewing that. We've also inventoried other recreational resources, such as open space and trails, including the rail trail. And we're processing that information. And then we have the official scoping period will start on November 14th. And that will be a kickoff meeting at Treasure Mountain Junior High School. And that will be from 5 o'clock till 7:30. And that's really to collect information from the public. You know, what information do they see out there? What issues do they see? What do they envision for the corridor? And we collect all that information and then develop a purpose and need statement for the project, goals and objectives, and then evaluate the alternatives based on that information and based on the goals and objectives of the project.
So has Park City hired somebody to do all of this, or Yep. Is it UDOT's hired people? I mean,
we've jointly entered into a contract. We are the contract administrator, the city is, but it is under UDOT's purview also because they will be making the determination of the project, ultimately the preferred alternative. So we've hired Alochner Engineering down in Salt Lake. They've done a lot of work up in the area, and they've also done a lot of work for UDOT. So this is really kind of their forte. They are an engineering firm, but they do have environmental specialists too. So they do prepare NEPA documents, which are National Environmental Policy Act documents that go along with the preliminary engineering and determine what potential environmental impacts there might be, what appropriate mitigation measures there are, and then prepare which is known as the finding of no significant impact of the environmental assessment, and that is submitted to UDOT for approval and also the Federal Highway Administration.
So this is a bit unusual how we've done this, right? I mean, Park City taking the lead on it?
It's very unusual. When we approached the director, Carlos Braceras, with this project delivery approach, they had never really done this across the state. I did these projects similarly in Caltrans, which is a California DOT, and NDOT also, which is Nevada DOT. Just approaching it as a local project so we can make sure the project fits the context of the community and also is a priority for the community also. So the state has statewide priorities. 248 isn't the highest priority for them, so we approached them and said we want to advance this project and we would do the contract administration and also fund this portion of the project and get it positioned for state transportation dollars also. So that gets it on the STIP, which is the State Transportation Improvement Program.
So we basically get paid back when it comes to the top of the pile here.
Correct, mm-hmm. Yes.
How much are we spending?
This contract, it went to council, I think, back in early September, and that was $1.3 million. Which proportionally, we're looking at a $20 to $30 million project. So that's really in line with kind of these planning costs and environmental assessment costs.
Right. So would UDOT be stepping up for that?
No, this is all local money right now. And then we will put that project or that money, they'll be accounted for towards the match of the project. So they've already allocated $10 million in the STIP for the project also. So it's really kind of our fair share, I guess, is the way you could look at it.
So we'd have to pay for the other 10 to 20 million?
They will pay for that. And then we'll also get congestion relief money, or it's called choke point money, on their STIP. And that would come from the state and the federal sources. So that's why we're going through the NEPA process, which is a federal process, so we can get the federal dollars also.
Now, did we go into this, though, with a project in mind?
We have previous studies that have been done that identified some potential alternatives. They weren't analyzed to the level of detail that required for preliminary engineering and the environmental assessment. So we have just general goals and objectives in the project in the corridor, such as giving priority to transit, bringing the Richardson Flat lot online, improving school access, and improving pedestrian safety also.
Yeah, when you talk about $30 million, though, that makes me think that we're moving mountains. Is that the case?
No, that's not the case. There's the potential to look at different alternatives, to look at the environmental impacts if we do need to cut into the slope, if we need to go to the other side, which would be the southern portion. But there's wetlands on that side also, so there is some constraints there, and that's what the environmental process is intended to inform us about.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, and what you know, I mean, would that road basically stay the same and just restriping? Is that what we're talking about?
No, it's more complicated than that. As you get past Wyatt Earp to the west, there's a lot of different constraints there in the lane widths and the shoulder widths. Drainage and access to the school all become very more complicated than just a simple restriping exercise.
Okay. What about 224? What are we doing there?
224, we are actually, we funded a jointly with the county, we funded an analysis. It's called the alternative analysis through the Mountain Accord effort. They gave us $400,000 to do this study. Similarly, it's on the same kind of par with 220 or 248. To kind of look at what those alternatives are through the corridor all the way from Kimball Junction to 248. so we are in the process of doing that analysis. There is a website called valleytomountainstudy.com that people can go to and look at the different alternatives. We have three alternatives right now. It's really in the same concept, trying to give priority to transit through the corridor. So there's a side running option, there's a center running option, and then there's a west side running option for dedicated mass transit lanes. So we will be having a meeting on that on December 5th, and that will be at the library from 5 until 7:30. And then after that project, or that portion of the phase of the project is wrapped up, it'll go into what already 248 is already in, is the environmental analysis phase of the project. So we're really queuing up these projects, and I know it seems cumbersome to the community, but these projects, transportation projects, are very complicated, and to get them through the permitting and the environmental process. So this will help us identify what's known as the locally preferred alternative, and that'll go into the NEPA process also, which is the National Environmental Policy Act.
Okay. Kenzie, let's turn to you and talk a little bit about the paid parking system, still a December 15 go date.
That's correct. We're really pleased to announce that our garage construction is largely complete, and by that I mean that we're done with the largest, you know, full-level closures. I want to thank the community for being patient with us throughout this process. We've been in construction mode for 3 months now, so it's been a lot, and we've worked really hard to try to, you know, minimize the closures as we go along. We will still see some work in the garage, and as of this week, we'll see some interior signage go up in the garage that will really help the wayfinding and flow. While we'll see the signage placement happen in pieces, by the time we go live, this is going to really reduce congestion and confusion as people circulate the garage and park their cars. And so that's a primary goal. We often see our guests unable to figure out, you know, where to go, up or down, or find the available spots.
Okay. And I think the big change for those of us who use the garage a lot are the entrance and exits are changing. There will be dedicated entrances,
That's correct. The top two, or the southernmost entrances, will be entrance only. And those first two, the northern side of Sweet Alley, will be exit only. And so it's a little bit difficult to picture, but it's going to ensure that we fill the south side of the garage and also keep a consistent flow per every level. And that's going to help our guests learn quickly and follow the signage. We'll see not only static signage inside the garage, but also some space counting signage that will show arrows and you know, 5 spots to the left, 45 spots ahead. So that will be a nice feature and really help people park quickly.
Yeah. And then the upper level of China Bridge has always been free, no permit needed. How does that change?
The roof area will be an entrance and exit area, and it will interact the same as the rest of the garage. There will be charge after 5 p.m. We are continuing sales of our blue square permits, and I want to make sure that our business owners out there remember that business blue permits go on sale next week, the 15th.
And what does a blue permit get you?
The blue permit is a transferable business permit, and it's at this point open to one permit per business. It's $400, and it's a great option for a business owner who needs to be able to give the permit to their manager on duty or circulate it through the staff, because it is the most versatile permit.
Right, and would they still pay? Or does that cover their annual parking fees?
The annual fee of $400 covers the entire year.
Talk to me a little bit about the carpool system, because you're also registering businesses for that.
Correct, yes. One of our wonderful solutions for employees is the carpool permit. And this is a requirement of just 2 vehicle occupants. And so we're really hopeful that the employees out there take advantage of this. It's guaranteed free parking based on space available, of course, but it is free parking permit, and all they need to do is come down to Public Works with their buddy, at least 2 people or more, and they get a free parking permit to go into the garage just as normal.
So how is that being enforced?
Well, that's a good question. If you and I were to register, we would actually both receive hang tags. The garage gating system would only allow one of us to enter at one given time. And so if we were trying to abuse it, you would be cut out, say, if I went in first. We will also have some manual enforcement on site. And it's really important that people out there know that we can't see trouble here, because we'll have to deactivate permits where we see abuse. And so when folks register, they'll be signing an agreement with us that states they understand that they must have carpoolers with them when they use the pass.
Okay, but there's no way to verify that the 2 or more are in the vehicle.
There will be some enforcement on site. Like I said, we'll have quite a bit of support in the garage as far as customer service for quite a while. We know that this is a big adjustment.
All right. And then how are things coming with the parking lot for the Old Town employees?
The parking lot's coming along. They were able to stripe the lot last Friday, which is great because it looks like the weather is now turned against us. But we have lighting coming and a shelter coming, and we're on track.
All right. Do people need a permit for that?
They do need to register their vehicles, and this is what we're calling a virtual permit. But all it involves is emailing us at homestakeparking@gmail.com, and all we need is your name, business owner, and license plate, and you're registered. And now we'll do our own internal auditing. We are preserving this lot for Main Street employees. And it's a really great option where folks can park there and get a quick shuttle. The key is the 10-minute frequency in shuttles.
And what have we got for the shuttles?
I believe they'll be cutaways and or vans.
Correct. Yeah, they'll be our vans and our cutaways, such as we use with the Dial-A-Ride. And we're looking to extend that service till about 4 o'clock in the morning also. So. Yeah, it should be very frequent. We'll have some passenger waiting facilities, as Kenzie said. We finally did get the striping in literally at the last moment on Friday. So hopefully those shuttles will be very frequent and not caught in the same congestion as well.
So we had to buy some of those shuttles, because I think we only have like 1 or 2, no? For the mobility vans, is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
we do have those. We have those in our fleet, so we will be using those. So, and not at the expense of our other services either, but we do have additional and surplus vehicles.
Okay, so that'll come from the Homestake lot. Can you give me the route?
Come to the Old Town Transit Center, but we're also looking at maybe doing a top of Main and a bottom of Main stop also. So, but right now it's identified to go to the Old Town Transit Center.
Okay, and following what, Park Avenue or?
We haven't laid that out. Yeah, we will watch kind of what's the path of least resistance, and then go that route.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a fixed route, and it's not stopping anywhere else, so
it is
fastest
not.
Way there.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, okay. let's see. In terms of winter traffic management, you said that you wanted to give the community a few heads up. Are those the ones that we had talked about, the December 5th and November 14th meeting, or there's more?
No, just throughout the whole winter, we'll be doing our traffic management. We'll have police officers at the intersections during those peak times, just trying to also get people to identify when those peak times are and use transit and carpool. We know when those busy days are. And then also just kind of planning ahead. We're working with the resorts. Vail plans on and Park City Mountain plan on doing additional parking management this year, which is going to be a huge improvement. Deer Valley is always very responsive as well. They'll be looking at doing additional employee shuttles. So just really, you know, planning your trip and then working internally. We're working with the resorts just to make sure that we all operate smoothly and get to do the things we want to do in this town.
Yeah, I didn't really know what the Park City Mountain meant when they talked about directed parking. They're going to have just people, bodies out there telling people where to go.
They are. We have an agreement that's under legal review right now to have them, because those are our right-of-way, such as Lowell and Manor and everything, that's up there to allow them to do their own on-demand parking. So they'll be instructing people and directing people so that it's not such a free-for-all up there.
All right. And real quick, is it too premature to discuss transit plans for the Arts and Culture District here?
It is not. Actually, the two projects we talked about earlier are very tied to that. So when we look at 248 and 248, bringing in those mass transit and dedicated transit lanes and priorities, we really look at the Arts and Culture District of having an intermodal hub there. And that really would de-emphasize the Old Town Transit Center, and we'd have more a transit presence in the Bonanza Park area. So people could get out of Bonanza Park and then have direct access to PCMR, Deer Valley, even out to Kimball as they come in on 248. So it's an integral part of that project. So,
are we talking parking or just a stop? I mean, where would people park to get there?
We're looking at the parking just to be supported for the land uses that it's there. It's not intended to be a park and ride facility. So it will be more of a transfer and intermodal hub where people can come there. If that's not their destination, then they can make the rest of their trip to the other primary destinations, which are typically obviously Old Town, Kimball, and then also the resorts and then other places of employment.
Okay. But it's not a park and ride. I guess I'm confused by
no.
what you're saying.
No, it's not a park and ride. So what we envision is on 248 and 224 is those dedicated transit lanes and high-priority transit coming into to Bonanza Park, and then from that point you would make a transfer to get to the areas that you need to get to. So
you'd be on a bus as opposed to a car.
Correct.
Private vehicle.
Yep. And,
okay.
And you know, the envision, what we envision there too, and what the community envisions is more of a live, work, play type of a center also. So where you can accomplish many tasks and errands in one area.
Okay. A lot more to come on that. You guys,
yes.
Thanks for coming in. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning. Well, Park City Toastmaster member Stacy Wagner will be competing this weekend in the district conference. He joins me now in the studio to tell us how he got to this point. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning.
So first, tell us a little bit about Toastmasters. It's a group that meets weekly here in Park City.
Yes, every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m., and it's a really good group. We have an awesome president, Marielle, and all of the members are really supportive of each other.
All right. Still at the Sheldon Richens Auditorium there? Is that where your meeting place is?
Summit County Library.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So how long have you been a member?
I've been a member a little over 5 months now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's impressive then, because to get to this point, you had to win a bunch of club and then regional.
Yes, I did. And it was a lot of fun. It's one of my dreams that I've always wanted to do. My family have always told me to begin public speaking because I have a unique story of overcoming extreme adversity. And so I decided to join this Toastmasters group.
Okay. So does everybody in the club compete? I mean, is that how you've worked your way up?
Not really. Everyone gets an opportunity to compete, and they sign up. And so you compete at the club level first. And then once you're selected, then you go on to what they call district and then regionals. So I was able to win at our club level, and then I went to the district and won at that level, and then won regionals, and now I'll be competing, I believe it's for the entire state this Saturday.
Yeah, well, I had heard not only Utah, but like Nevada, Wyoming, and Oregon, so it's a pretty big pretty big deal.
Now it's a little pressure now.
Yeah.
But so I'm excited.
Where's the competition?
It's in Provo at the Marriott.
Oh, okay.
In Provo. Yes.
Okay. So you won in the category known as Tall Tale. Does that mean it's a story you made up?
Actually, it's a true story. And the Tall Tale was the part of me learning that it's an exaggerated story. So it's a really fun story that really happened to me. There's just some exaggerated parts of the story.
All right. So this is the one that you've taken through the different levels?
Yes. And it is called Home Invasion Gone Wild.
Okay. Can you give us an idea what it's about?
Yes. I'm a city kid, and I grew up playing sports all my life. So I'm very scared of rodents as well as wild animals, bugs, what have you. It was 2 weeks before my wedding, and we had what I call a home invasion gone wild. And the leading up to the Tall Tale, I kind of used all the stories about people having bears and things kind of break into their homes. Well, this wasn't a bear. However, I told the tall tale as if it was this humongous creature, but it was a squirrel, and I was scared to death, and my fiance saved me. And then once we had our wedding, beautiful wedding, we were on our honeymoon in Northern California in the Redwoods. And again, I kind of told the tall tale a little bit more, and we had an encounter with another squirrel, but this time this squirrel was giving me a message from his cousin in Utah that it wasn't over. So
okay,
that's the sum of my story.
So comedy works well then, it sounds like.
Absolutely. It's been really, really fun. And a lot of people, once I'm finished telling the tall tale, they ask, was that a real story? And I said, yes. The squirrel just couldn't talk, and it wasn't 2 feet tall and 50 pounds, but the story itself was very true. So.
Yeah. Is that what tends to win, is comedy, as opposed to something that's a little bit maybe more sad? Or
I think comedy does win because they have a humorous contest as well. But the Tall Tale in itself, I think I've won up to this point because it's really relatable. And I'm a big guy. And I think that people were just really taken that I would be so terrified of this small rodent. And believe me, it's true. I was scared to death.
Yeah. So does it get easier as you do it?
It gets a little easier. The crowds get a little bigger, so that's a little nerve-wracking. But I'm excited, and I'm excited to do this professionally. So it's been a lot of fun learning, and as I grow, I give so many props to my Toastmasters group, everyone that's a member. They have been very supportive and truly helped me to get to this point.
Okay. Well, best of luck to you this weekend.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing how you do.
Thank you.
KPCW. Well, Alpine Sports Medicine, owned and operated by longtime local Andrea Twilliger, has been open since 1999. Now she says it's time to let the business go to an organization that can be more efficient at doing it. In the studio, tell us about that. I have Kim Cohey. She's with the University of Utah, and we're hoping that Andrea can join us. Looks like she got stuck in some traffic. So good morning to you, Kim.
Good morning.
So tell me, you're with the University of Utah
Health.
Yeah. So are they purchasing the business, and it's going to remain where it is there across the hallway from Park City Chamber Bureau?
Yes. We've made a business agreement to partner with them for physical therapy services here in Park City.
All right. So when does this happen?
This should happen December 1st.
All right. And then in terms of what that means then for the existing staff, do they stay?
They all stay. Any existing staff that are interested in staying get to stay.
Okay. So, Andrea, you just walked in. And when you opened, I think you were just probably really a handful of PT providers in town, huh?
We were one of the few back in 99. We opened our own practice.
Yeah. So when you started, was this just your business or did you have partners then?
I had two other partners and then merged into having one of us kind of separated, and then the next one we added Robert Cervantes, and we have a practice in Salt Lake as well.
Ah, okay. So are they taking over the Salt Lake one as well?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And then what does that mean for you? Are you retiring, or are you going to stay working?
I have kids to put through college, Leslie. So no, the answer is no. I'm lucky enough to kind of going to be managing, I guess, our facility, and as well as the Salt Lake one, and we're kind of starting all this transition as we speak.
Yeah. So why make a change now? I mean, isn't it kind of nice to be able to run your own show and
it is.
Be the boss?
It is after a while, but it's getting harder and harder to own your own practice in this busy world of insurance and reimbursement and all the icky stuff that comes with all the billing. So we've just kind of been searching around and kind of deciding what we wanted to do for the future. And I've known Kim for a while, and we kind of planted the seed a few years ago, and it just didn't quite happen. And then we kept planting, and it came together.
Yeah. So that you're just saying that the University of Utah just can do it a lot better in terms of just the paperwork and the billing.
They have entire departments on this. You know, not only was I the marketing department, the billing department, the whatever department. Now I have people that can do all those things.
Right.
So,
as manager, you'll just be making sure that you've got staff on board to to do the work.
Yep, and Kim will be my boss. So hopefully I'll be a good employee.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be.
Yeah. And in terms of what the clinic offers, I mean, will it expand in terms of anything or?
It possibly will expand in terms of specialty services, maybe our running program or something like that. But for the most part, they're going to continue to provide outpatient orthopedic sports medicine care for the most part.
Yeah. They've got those cool weightless kind of running deals.
Yes. It's called an Alter-G. We have an Alter-G down in Salt Lake. And things like that will become more of an opportunity, I think, too, to acquire some equipment that may help them expand and provide patients with additional things that will help them get better faster.
Yeah. I mean, is this kind of the future then? I mean, we're going to see these smaller PT facilities go?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. It's possible it's a bit of a trend because how complicated insurance is and all the other things in running a business. I believe private practice will still exist and be able to thrive, but I think it gets more complicated.
Yeah. What have you seen over the last few years? I mean, certainly our town's grown. I mean, but
our town is collaborating with lots of other groups, and I don't know. Our little small town has got lots of, you know, corporations in it, and there's a lot of lives here. You know, you head into the grocery store, and it's like, oh my God, who are all these people from our once little town? But I think it gives patients a choice. You know, you have all the other big company up here, Intermountain Healthcare, and, you know, they are expanding as well. And I think the U wants some increased presence in Park City, and we're a good group to join up with.
Okay. So we'll still see the same people and really probably won't notice a change at all then, huh?
Probably just maybe not. Signage might change a little bit.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, Leslie.
All right. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.